Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Carium, the telehealth platform enabling healthcare's digital transformation, helping you care for people within the fabric of their daily lives. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Matt Allen, CEO and co-founder of Different Kind. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So what I always like to do before getting into the main part of the conversation is give my guests a chance to provide more of an introduction in terms of who they are and what they do. So Matt, the floor is yours on that front.
All right. Well, my friends call me a dentist guy, which I think softens what I do a little bit. So I am a dentist by training. I worked in a federally qualified health center in Denver for a lot of years. I'm based in Colorado. And my kind of specific unique niche of expertise is around patient communication. So I'm one of two dentists in the world who is a member of the Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers. So I've been consulting with a lot of dental groups and think tanks and various organizations over the last 5 or 6 years, really helping dental professionals try to learn how to communicate with patients more effectively. So kind of understanding that behavior change is not something that is just something that we tell patients to do. That's led me to shared decision-making, some other pieces, which we've kind of incorporated into our new company as we really seek to help patients understand that that's a possibility in dental offices. So that's a little bit about me.
So what first interested you in getting into the dental field?
I think like a lot of other dentists, my dad's a dentist. So saw it, kind of was like, oh, this is interesting. But for me, I think my path was a little different. My dad doesn't even really understand what I do anymore. So that's always an interesting thing, right? We're like, we have the same degree and you don't even know what my job is. But for me, I was actually in dental school. I was in Guatemala doing some, helping with an organization down there. Really saying, wow, this is something that I really want to do. I got into this to help people. This seems like a really great way of doing that. Like, how can I do that, in the US? That really led me to federally qualified health centers, which was great. And I think one of the best parts about that is it really taught me a lot about healthcare in general. And so I think one of my kind of unique strengths in dentistry is that, I've always been able to see more of the healthcare landscape and say, how do these things that are working in medicine apply to dentistry? How do these things that are not working in medicine apply to dentistry? How can we drive the field forward according to the broader landscape instead of just kind of focused on a little narrower field there?
And actually, that's a really interesting observation. So kind of from your perspective, how do you see that broader landscape and how do you see, for lack of a better way to frame it, traditional healthcare and dentistry fitting together?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's super interesting. There's so many different pieces there, right? That, why is the mouth excluded from the health of the overall body? Like it's the only part that really is, even over the last few years, like mental health has obviously become much more integrated, right? But for a while, that was the same kind of way. I actually heard someone say recently that dental is the new mental. That's probably a good thing, given the increased understanding of the importance of mental health over the last several years, last decade or so. Hopefully, we're seeing the same things happening in oral health. But yeah, I mean, I think that dentistry historically has just been behind medicine, I would say, in lots of different ways. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of those ways today. 10, 15, 20 years of like, hey, things that happened in medicine that long ago are kind of now coming to dentistry. I think a great example is value-based care. That's obviously been explored in a lot of ways in medicine over the last 20 years or so. And it's kind of coming, to dentistry now. We're really seeing the kind of starting rumblings of what that actually might look like and feel like in various different states and various different spots. So lots of different ways, but I think that, in general, it's just kind of been lagging. And I think some of what we've been trying to do is to kind of close that gap to say, how can we learn more quickly and iterate more quickly on what's working or what's not and actually, make it so that it's not such a disparate feeling for patients.
Yeah, I'd say, why don't we dive into some examples of kind of what you've observed as maybe some of the higher priorities in terms of that lagging? Because you know, people might find it surprising because it's often said that healthcare is lagging so many other industries. And to hear your perspective that dentistry is lagging behind healthcare makes it, you know, almost creates that feeling that dentistry is operating in a model that is completely divorced from what the world is today.
Yeah. And I mean, I think patients feel that. I think in terms of examples of that, I think we can point to a lot of different pieces. Obviously, we're in this huge kind of health tech boom right now, and digital health, right, is so important and valuable in healthcare in general. And there's a dental company that has raised a lot of money recently, and they just released their app, and they're like, this is the first app made by a dentist. And that was like just this year. And you're like, well, that's not entirely true. But I kind of get what they're saying in terms of there's really never been something that, you know, we haven't had this huge focus, especially for patients, on technology and what that looks like and feels like. Dentists themselves tend to be very technical people, like to kind of find those techie solutions, but often that's been around things that are unknown to a patient, like a kind of bonding agent or, you know, some of the very like specific things that they're doing when they're working in your mouth. But patients don't necessarily know the difference. And so I think what we're seeing over the last number of years is this, you know, kind of, things are catching up a little bit in terms of, hey, like this is important. We're obviously seeing this. So that's one example of ways that we see that. And then I think that there, you know, in terms of like integration of health services, right, we've seen that become something that's very important in medicine in lots of different ways, for cost reasons, for convenience reasons, for experience reasons. And I think that we're starting to see some of those models actually that are coming into play a little bit more, which is exciting from both a patient perspective and I think from having dentistry not kind of be the redheaded stepchild of the healthcare system.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to explore that patient experience aspect a little bit more. You know, just because from personal experience, and maybe this is just like that low hanging fruit and the easy thing to do, but my dentist will, you know, I'll get the text or the email reminders about appointments or that I need to schedule an appointment, whereas I never get anything like that from my physician's office or from my primary care physician office. You know, so maybe, as I said, that those are the kind of the easy steps that could be done. And it felt like dentistry picked that up really early on. But I'm taking away from you that there are a lot of other areas where that attention has not occurred.
Yeah, I think that, you know, so what I see, and I think one of the historic reasons for some of what you're saying right there, right, is that dentistry has kind of historically been operated as a small business, which is not necessarily the case in medicine. And so there has been more focus on business, which is unfortunate because I think a lot of patients feel that, right? We hear from patients like, oh, it feels like my dentist is trying to sell me something all the time or whatever. And so in some of those ways, right, the tech or the innovations that have come about have sometimes come about because of trying to drive business for good, for bad, indifferent, right? I think there are good parts to that too, right? It's not entirely bad that you're going to see your dentist regularly. But I think from a patient experience perspective, it's really interesting because I think some of those on the patient perspective, and I think this is true of like health tech in general, have been, you know, really focused on convenience. So make it easy for me, right? Which is really important. And as we think about patient experience, I don't want to necessarily have to sit on the phone for 45 minutes trying to make an appointment in the middle of my day, you know, when I could just as easily do it on my phone in a couple of seconds. So convenience is obviously an important part of patient experience, but if that's the only innovation we're making, I think we're missing something, right? And so this kind of traditional kind of model of dental care or healthcare in general, if we don't do other things to make that experience feel different when patients come into the office or are having a virtual visit or doing something like that, that we're missing the mark. And so what I've said a lot over the last 5 years is dentistry historically has kind of been one of the most paternalistic, if you will, professions in terms of I'm the expert, I know what to do. And so what that feels and sounds like to a patient is you need to do this, you should do this, here's what's going on with you, here's how I can fix it, very one-sided. And so I think a lot of what we've been thinking about over the last 5 years, or I've been thinking about and what we're trying to do a different kind is really to say, hey, how can we change that into partnership? How can we have empathy for your lived experience of, you know, going to the dentist, being a little kid, being strapped into a papoose board, and now you're terrified of this place, right? That's kind of this emotional, mental trauma that you had from when you were a kid. How can we recognize that and be sensitive to that? So I think that there are lots of different ways beyond convenience, which then gets into quality, right? Which then gets into some of those different pieces as we look forward. So it's not just convenience that we need to work on, but those other pieces as well.
So kind of how are you thinking about introducing more of that partnership? And, you know, I think probably all areas of healthcare still stand to learn from that perspective, because, you know, that partnership and shared decision-making and collaboration are very much, you know, buzzwords across the entire industry, I would say.
Yeah, I think so, which is encouraging to me. You know, I think that a number of years ago, that necessarily wasn't the case. So that's encouraging to me, the uptick in just the conversation around that. And I think that, well, at least what I see around that, what we're working on, is ways to make that easy. Because what we hear from providers a lot, what we hear from healthcare professionals a lot in this, dental professionals, is it just takes too much time. I was never trained in this. I don't know how to do it, right? And so kind of saying, hey, this is important, you need to do it, is not good enough. We need to provide the tools, not just for the providers, but we also need to do it for patients. And that's really, you know, a big part of our thesis, A Different Kind, is that patients need to know what's possible. Patients need to understand that and feel empowered in that, so that they become part of the conversation. It can't just be one-sided from the provider to say, hey, we want you to be a part of this conversation. What do you think, right? And they're like, well, I don't really know how to do that. So I think building tools, supporting both sides of you know, the providers and the patients in that learning experience is very important. And so as we think about our products, we're kind of really exploring both of those sides to say, this can't just work for one side. It's got to be something that we build for both sides, and it's got to be something that we can support both sides in as well, because it is unfamiliar, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah. So is it accurate to say that it's, you know, really trying to build out a stronger foundation and knowledge basis, I think you said, for both sides, both for the dentist and the other practitioners, as well as the patients? Because if both sides aren't coming in with the ability to access information, then you're still going to have kind of a conversation of ships passing in the night.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we've seen that in a lot of other industries, which has, you know, been one of the good parts that I think we can learn from in healthcare, right? Where obviously just the information explosion has been huge, but that, you know, more data doesn't always necessarily lead to like better results, right? Like we have to process that data. We have to, you know, shape that data. And I think we can learn from that in healthcare to say, okay, like let's take shared decision-making for an example here. You know, the goals of that, right, are to hear the patient's perspective, understand risks, benefits, alternatives, you know, understand a lot. And it's a lot of that's very nuanced. It's very difficult. For example, you know, my son just had Kawasaki's disease, which was a really big challenge. And I feel very knowledgeable in healthcare and I have access to up-to-date and all these things that should help me make a good decision. And even still, it was really hard for me to, in the moment, as I'm going through this kind of emotional trauma of like holding him in the hospital when he's really sick and wondering if his heart is going to be okay, right? How do I do that really well? And so it's not an easy challenge, I would say. But I do think, so the way that we've approached that, at least A Different Kind, is to say, I think for a lot of people, what that's looked like is, let's just give you information and then let you kind of sort through that. And I think our unique take on that, that we've looked at, is to say, let's discuss your values first and let's understand what's important to you. And then as a healthcare professional, I can actually help kind of guide you into the right lanes of what's even possible, versus just giving you all the information and then letting you have to sort through that. You know, even with my help, that can be really difficult because I might not know what's most important to you. So starting with those values of, hey, what's most important to you and ultimately what's going to drive your decision-making here is really helpful for me to know as we move forward.
Yeah, and it sounds like that relates back to one of your earlier comments of you're trying to think about the entire person. And, you know, I think as you're suggesting, if you don't know what's motivating that person or what they're thinking, you could give what's very likely sound advice, but it's not going to be acted upon because it's not the right sound advice for that particular person.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, I think there's been this historical paradigm in healthcare and probably just in life in general, that like what people need is more information. Which is true. People need some sort of, you know, information knowledge base. But I think there's some great studies out there, especially around shared decision making, that show that that's simply not enough to help people feel empowered and engaged and activated in their care. So if you're talking about behavior change, right, there's lots of good studies around motivational interviewing that show that it's not just knowing that smoking is bad for you or that, you know, flossing is good for you or whatever that's going to motivate that change. And the good part is there are evidence-based strategies that we can use and employ to actually make those changes, which is great. And I think that, you know, as we think about that next step in kind of quality improvement in healthcare, helping providers, helping patients to step into that space to say, this is really important. It's not totally related, but I saw something recently where, you know, thinking, you know, obviously I'm in a startup right now. So this like whole world of there's lots to do and whatever, but you know, one of the main reasons that startups fail is just like co-founder friction and relationships, right? And so the idea that like some of these soft skills aren't important or some of the ways that like we interact with each other as patients and providers and healthcare professionals is not important, I think is missing the mark. And so, you know, just the understanding of this is critically important to the ways that we are going to improve, you know, outcomes, quality, experience in the future. Is just something that we really need to embrace.
Yeah, no, I think all very good points. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Matt Allen from Different Kind, and we've been talking about dentistry and innovation within dentistry. Picking up on that point that you're just making around being able to engage personally with the patient and learn more about what motivates them in order to help provide better advice, does that tie back to what you mentioned at the beginning of your background in motivational interviewing? You know, because when you mentioned that, I meant to pick up on that towards the beginning, because I'm not sure I've heard that phrase or that feel before. So kind of interested to know, one, what it is and then how it feeds into, you know, the concepts that you're developing.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, for me, so motivational interviewing, yeah, for those of you who, you know, might not be familiar, if you're listening, you're like, what is that? Is that like, you know, bringing people on board or whatever, or for your team, interviewing them? No, not quite. It's really just an evidence-based way of helping people change. It's a conversational style and strategy to help people make behavior changes. It was developed in the early 80s by a clinical psychologist from New Mexico, along with a guy from Wales. So Bill Miller and Steve Rolnick are the two kind of founders of this, certainly based on a lot of the work that Carl Rogers did and the positive psychology kind of understanding that he had of client-centered counseling. And so that, you know, was like really effective in making behavior change in substance abuse. The paradigm at the time was very confrontational. You have a problem. Can't you see how much you're hurting your family? You need to fix this, right? And that just doesn't work. And so it developed this kind of whole methodology to say, hey, look, like we think we can make a difference here. And it, you know, was proven out in that way. And so then it kind of said, hey, if this is helping people make changes in this way, could this work in chronic disease management in primary care? So lots of studies around asthma and diabetes management, things like that, where it's not just a one-time thing, right? It's like this consistent, constant obedience in the same, long obedience in the same direction, essentially, that's really helping people become healthy. And yeah, same things. We're seeing the same outcomes. And so going back to that health center, super integrated, that's where I first learned about it, because we're, you know, treating a lot of diabetic patients and whatnot. And I was like, wow, this is really interesting. Where is this in dentistry? And there were some early studies, you know, kind of coming out saying, hey, this could be effective. But in terms of operationalizing it, what does that look like and sound like in a dental chair? You know, a lot of it at the time was just like, talk to your patients about smoking, which is really important, obviously. But there are obviously many other ways that, you know, oral health behaviors are, you know, important in terms of overall health. And so that I think impact other areas as well, like obesity, right? So your diet and what you're eating obviously impacts your oral health, but it impacts your weight, impacts lots of other things as well. So yeah, for us, in terms of how that's kind of played into it, I mean, certainly, you know, that's one of the things that I'm most excited about in our product roadmap. It's like not, you know, what we're building first and foremost, but it's certainly something that we're really excited about. And I think doing it in a different way than, you know, might be kind of out there right now is something that I'm definitely very excited about.
And it sounds like it's probably fair to say that, you know, because you're not seeing it out there right now and, you know, the challenges that you're seeing right now, you know, it all feeds into evolving that interaction, especially on the dentistry side, but also hopefully kind of following through and creating more wholesome or comprehensive interactions across the care spectrum that an individual is receiving.
100%. I think that if we can help patients take some ownership of that in a really helpful way, right? I think sometimes we say, oh, patients need to take ownership of their own health. True statement, right? Like that is 100% true. We want them to be activated and engaged in their care. But that can't be abandonment. That can't be, well, it's on you now. Like you just take care of it, right? So I think the challenge is to build tools that support that partnership, both from the patient perspective and from the provider perspective, to encourage training, to encourage continuing education, to encourage, as we think about, again, informing patients about what's possible, that here's the kind of interactions that tend to help improve your health. And here's the kind of style that would actually, tend to make things better for you, is an important kind of expectation to go in when you walk into a dentist's office or to a doctor's office, that this is going to be a conversation and it's not going to be, historically, it has been often a monologue, right? Like somebody's talking at you. But I think we all can agree, we all want better outcomes. We all want healthier people. And I think patients want that. And so, hey, we want you to be a part of that conversation. Here's how you can do that effectively.
As that hopefully starts to become more entrenched, how do you see the evolution of the patient experience occurring? Recognizing that in some places it probably has started for, kind of more physical healthcare. But, now that you're looking at it from the dentistry angle, along with your experience in the FQHC of the fully integrated care model, because, to some degree, the FQHCs probably don't get enough credit for, the scope of innovation that they do that flies under the radar. But again, kind of like, how do you see that evolutionary process playing out?
Yeah, I mean, I think... Yeah, it's a really good question. One of my favorite kind of places to look at and think about this is at Cleveland Clinic. They have their chief experience officer, just really thoughtful lady. And she wrote a great paper last year that kind of came out talking about some of this. And, they're thinking about, here's some core values that we have in his organization. Here's how that plays into this. And, those are like empathy and, partnership and ease of access and safety. And so, they have a roadmap for that, but it's certainly a roadmap. And obviously they're a leader in some of this work, across the country. But still it's not all that easy for them. And so I think some of it does come to data. We have to understand, some of this first in terms of where people are currently at. We can obviously make whatever changes we can in the dark, and maybe some of those will be helpful. But I think understanding some of it, measuring some of this first from a patient perspective is really important. And so I think looking at things like, patient reported outcomes and experiences and helping providers understand that those are important metrics for us as we move forward. And it's not simply just a nice to have, it's a need to have. And then I think a lot of times there are evidence-based styles and strategies around some of this that are really effective. And it's not just, hey, you need to be more empathetic, right? That's great in terms of a big picture vision, but like, how am I actually going to do that? And I think that that's where it comes back to really providing those tools effectively on the provider side and on the patient side, kind of providing those tools. I mean, we kind of have to, it's not just educating, giving patients information on, their disease, but it's educating patients and informing patients on here's what will actually help your health in the office. And these are the kinds of things that are going to be good for you. We all know those kind of very basic things around it takes 21 days or whatever it is, right, to make a behavior change. And that's great to know. And if we can have a tool that helps a habit, some sort of habit tracker, right? Those kinds of things, those are great things. But if patients don't know why that exists and whatever, they might not use it. They might not care. So it's kind of both sides, right? You have to know what it's for. You have to know why it's helpful. You have to know, like, somebody's got to be checking in with you. That's why care coordination is important. So all of those different pieces, I think, have to come together, which makes it a challenge, but certainly I think it's something that we're realizing is necessary for the next era of healthcare and dental care in this country.
And kind of thinking about that care coordination component of it, would you be envisioning that it would be a care, maybe one centralized care coordinator that is handling both the healthcare medicine piece of it along with the dentistry, or would each side have its own that then meets somewhere, you know, somewhere along the line?
That's a great question. I mean, I think in the short term, it's hard to sometimes get, you know, dentistry and medicine to play in the same sandbox, if you will. Not because they don't necessarily want to or don't see the other side as valuable, but because people are just so busy. We certainly know that. And so I think in the short term, it's probably going to be, you know, individual, you know, dentistry care coordinators and medicine care coordinators. But we're certainly seeing innovations in that space, right? Of, you know, what does it look like to do A1C testing in dental offices consistently? And is that easier for patients? You know, if patients are coming in consistently for their dental appointments, you know, we know that diabetic patients are more likely to, you know, be at risk for periodontal disease. And so if they are coming in, you know, four times a year for dental cleanings, well, that's the exact same, you know, modality that they might be coming in for to get their A1C checked. And so can we do some of that, you know, in that way? So I think that there are opportunities and certainly some kind of initial points that we can kind of come in and say, yeah, here's how we can do some of that together to bring us forward. But yeah, to just say, hey, care coordinator, you're responsible for all of this, I think might be a little bit overwhelming and challenging for people at first. So yeah, my guess, and that's just, you know, just a feeling, this is not certainly not gospel, but that it would be probably easier to get things going with individual representatives from dentistry and medicine.
Yeah, no, I think kind of that graduated approach that you just described makes sense, because it's, you know, there's also probably over, you know, other pieces of alignment that need to occur. And, you know, unfortunately we are already at the end of our time. So it's, you know, kind of coming up, you know, hearing that potential process for how it could play out, I think is a great takeaway for folks to think about. And, you know, as I said, believe it or not, we are out of time. So I want to thank my guest, Matt Allen, for a great conversation today.
Thanks, Matt. I really appreciate you having me. And yeah, it was great to be with you.
Yeah, and thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.